Hello and welcome to this episode of Hacker Public Radio. My name is Dudman. I have a little podcast on technology over at dudmanovi.cz where I talk about technology. But one of my big pet interests is animal husbandry, feeding my family, kind of a self-sufficiency. I love playing about with gadgets and doodads, Arduino, Arch Linux, distros. You know, I love gadgets, I can't put them down, but the point of my podcast is to be interested in all technologies, not just modern ones. And if you've listened, I did an episode on hacking and programming recently, but trying to stretch out the appeal to beyond just, say, one particular programming language, but applying it to our whole life. And in this episode, I would like to bring to you a subject very close and dear to me and my family, which is food. What is healthy food and what should we eat to be healthy? Now, I know it's something we've been studying and doing in a very practical sense for the last 10 years. The book I'm going to mention now, the original one is called Weston A. Price, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. And I'm going to describe a little bit about it, but it's a wonderful book. I'll write some notes and you can find the descriptions in the show notes. But, you know, there are different schools of thoughts. You know, if you're a vegetarian, a vegan, that there's so many different diets and fads. And I'm, with my wife, kind of the person who is eternally trying to stay open-minded and look into every aspect. There was a point in our lives where we were dabbling with vegetarianism and macrobiotics and being interested in some of these things. But we didn't find anything else which was as sensibly written and logical as what I'm going to try to describe to you now. So, if you are a vegetarian or you're that way inclined, if you just keep an open mind, and I'm not trying to convert anybody here, but I think it is important to mention some of these things and to kind of start a dialogue or a conversation and mention some alternative thought which isn't in the mainstream at all. But if you're able to look at a few of these websites I'm going to mention, then you might be fascinated by some of the research and the evidence to back up what I'm going to talk about. So basically, I guess I should say, you know, if you enjoy butter and cream and full fat milk and, you know, fat on your meat and, you know, good old fashioned foods, well, and bacon, you know, I hear some Linuxy type tech podcast people talking about bacon. You know who I'm talking about, Door to Door and other people. You know, I love bacon as well. And I want to give you a way to actually allow yourself to eat these things, because they are actually very important. But like many things, you know, there's an element of truth in everything. You know, everything, sometimes there's kind of half truth. And, you know, it is true that the milk today is unhealthy, and it's connected with the way it's produced, and that the way the animals are grown and the way it's produced, and, you know, it's pasteurized and homogenized, and the cows aren't given proper food, and it's not even the correct type of cow, you know. But if we fix those things and return back to how cows were kept 100, 200 years ago, or how we keep our cows today, because we have a few in our shed outside and in the meadows in the summer, just for our own personal satisfaction when we drink our lovely cold milk full of cream, and I can see the beautiful rosy faces of my children. But if we talk about foods and know the difference, that we're not talking about industrial meats here. We're not talking about industrially processed milks, you know. So if I'm talking about these kinds of foods, which are demonized now, I'm not talking about the way they are produced nowadays, but the way that they should be produced on a small scale and to a much higher quality. But, you know, there's lots of talk about cholesterol and low-fat diets, and, you know, rather having vegetable oils instead of the old traditional saturated fats, lard and butter. Unfortunately, if you spend any time now looking into some of this evidence I'm going to try and describe to you now, it's all a great big myth. This information that's being pushed out to the mainstream media and the mainstream people about what is healthy. To be honest, if you listen to any dietary recommendations, you'd probably be a lot better off if you just ate the exact opposite. And the obesity epidemic and many of those other things are more attributed to the high sugar diet and the high corn and grain diet and starchy breads and what have you, and then fats. There is actually a wonderful book called, I think it's Eat Fat, Lose Fat. Basically, the premise is you don't get fat by eating fatty things. You know, you get fat by eating nutrient undense, you know, food which isn't good for you, because something strange happens in your body, and your body's reaction is to actually cling on to all the energy which goes into your body and not process and burn it at all. And that is how you get fat. And this is contrary possibly to anything you've heard before, but that is my job, is to mention something perhaps a little radical and perhaps a little unusual, to poke you all in the ribs a little bit and get us all to think. But the subject I really want to talk about and describe briefly now is the book called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration by Weston A. Price. And Weston was a dentist, a very successful dentist in the US in the 1920s and 30s, I believe. And I'm eternally grateful to him, because he did what isn't done now very often, it seems to me, by scientists. He did a truly scientific piece of work which are helping thousands and thousands of people now. And he went and he found healthy people which were in isolated communities which hadn't yet been touched by modern civilization, by the civilized foods like white sugar and processed white breads and the canned goods and of course the lifestyle which went with that. But they, usually because of geological location, they were isolated. You know, there was one Austrian or Swiss group, I think, community, and they were down in a valley, and it was inaccessible only by foot in the summer, you know, so the whole of the year, except, you know, good weather in the summer, it was inaccessible. So they had to be completely self-sufficient and dependable upon themselves, and they had been through generation after generation. And, you know, they didn't have tooth decay, of course. As Weston, his first concern was tooth, so he took with him his entourage. Travel in those days wasn't as it is now. You know, you don't jump on a plane and a bus and get driven into the place. These places were inaccessible, and I guess he planned for weeks or months how to get there, which peoples to visit, all this communication and collaboration to even meet these people. And of course, he didn't have an iPhone or an SLR camera to easily take pictures, but he took thousands of pictures in the old-fashioned way on these glass sheets, had them shipped back, as well as taking samples of the foods these people were eating so he could analyze them back in the labs later. And I believe he visited about 14 or so isolated, separated geographically around the world groups. And the things he noticed is they didn't eat all the same foods, but what they did eat had a few things in common. And they ate nutrient-dense food, and that wasn't... And also, they processed the foods in specific ways, which we have, especially in modernized processing plants and the way we want to speed up the process now for our foods, we have actually forgotten, you know. I'm quite lucky here in the Czech Republic, because some of this information, you know, is still kind of common knowledge and practiced, although it's probably overwhelmed by the amount of alcohol and sugar that is consumed here in the Czech Republic, unfortunately. I believe in Europe, Czech Republic is the second only to the United Kingdom for obesity rates and what's it called, the sugar defect that people have, diabetes, that's the one. Anyway, so he visited those 14 groups, and of course he discovered very few dental cavities in the young and the old. You know, people 90 years old or 100 with perfectly healthy teeth, you know, maybe damaged because they might have fallen over and bashed a tooth out occasionally, or, you know, but had very, very few, you know, in the 1 or 2% dental cavities, and they had dirty teeth because maybe their dental hygiene was low, and it wasn't normal to be brushing all the time and keeping them clean, because it's actually a myth. The damage to teeth, I'm understanding from all of this, it doesn't occur necessarily from the outside. The terrain exists because we don't have the correct food to keep our bones and our teeth and our hair and, you know, all of the parts of our body strong, and then it creates a terrain where illness and cavities and then attack us from the outside. It's really fascinating sometimes for my wife and I, you know, we study all this, and then we listen to the advice that dentists give, you know. And there was in the Czech Republic here on a website my wife found, and it was, you know, a dentist's advice, how to look after your teeth. There was like 10 or 20 points, and the 20th, you know, the lowest priority was mentioned of, you know, nutrient, you know, good food. But he didn't specify at all what that good food was. Well, anyway, I'm going to try here and mention the good nutrient-dense foods, and then some of the foods which are problematic and we would probably want to avoid, just to give you an idea of the kind of direction I'm going to go in. Then I thought I would mention the differences in the shapes of the people, and the tendencies towards the way that the children will grow, and then what happened to the children of just 10 years after those isolated groups of people changed their diets, after they'd been penetrated by the modernization, you know, the roads had been built through to their previously independent and isolated communities, and they started trading, you know, trading their furs and whatever they produced locally, and sometimes even their food. They started to trade their good food for canned and processed goods, which had been mass produced, and as a result, it was quite shocking what happened to them, to be honest. But so the good foods, you know, some of the things we want to focus on as nutrient dense foods are, you know, milk, butter, fat, but all of these sources of food are from non-industrialized and well cared for animals, you know. So in a sense, I believe and empathize with a lot of the values that vegetarians have, and the sort of disgust towards the way that a lot of farming or animal husbandry practices are carried out nowadays. So if I'm suggesting non-vegetarian type things, it's with the understanding that those practices are done in a humane and a high quality way. We personally keep a few cows, Jersey cows, very high fat milk, but only for our own consumption. And we do eat the bulls and the meat, but we don't keep them just for that. You know, I don't enjoy killing animals, but I hope as you listen on, that you'll come to understand that for growing people and for even aging or for adults wanting to conceive easily healthy children, then it is very important to have these nutrient-dense foods. So, maybe I should have planned this all a little bit more and really tried to make it a multi-part episode, but that's not my way. I'm going to ramble a little bit, so thank you for bearing with me. So more of the foods, you know, often maligned nowadays are internal organs, you know, liver, kidneys, heart, the blood of the animal. And again, you know, we have been trained not to think about these things, but in the past, those parts of the animal, if an animal has to be butchered, were valued much more highly than just fat, than just meat, sorry. And talking about meat, it is actually, he found, Dr. Weston Price, that it was very important to have not lean meat, but very important to eat meat with the fat connected to it. Again, that's something else which is much maligned nowadays. And it's often true that to find the truth, if you simply follow the money, and, you know, just think for yourself a little bit, what is easier to produce and mass process, you know, so that they can maximize the profit margins? Well, it's very difficult to mass produce healthy, fresh, you know, dairy and high quality meat and, you know, sanely and beautifully butchered with compassion towards the animals. It's not really conducive to mass production, you know. And of course, these are probably influencing factors why the information that's been told to us as to what is healthy has gone in the direction it has, you know, more towards more easily available, you know, grains and soya and more vegetables and fruits. Unfortunately, what Weston A. Price discovered is the foods that we are now eating and are being told that are healthy to us nowadays, these primitively, you know, isolated peoples weren't eating, you know. So I'll carry on describing the things they were eating. So it's butter, milk, you know, animal saturated fats, and plenty of them, really, much higher quantities than we'd ever consider, at least in these modern days. But maybe we should reconsider that. Internal organs, you know, liver, kidneys, brains, eyes, is another thing. If you have weak and alien eyes, you know, the best way to get what your eyes need is to eat and consume the elements that are in eyes, you know, or brains, you know. And a lot of these foods are considered to be kind of aphrodisiacs, you know, they give us this potency and energy. And there is a reason for that, because, you know, they contain, you know, the sort of life-giving for the next generation. I hope you understand what I mean there without being crude. But these things are very true. And this nutrient-dense food, which gives us that vitality, and I don't just mean in a sexual way, but gives us that vitality and energy and passion for life, those are the things that we should be consuming, not the food types which kind of slow us down and make us feel lethargic and keep us calm, you know. So that's an idea of some of the foods, but there's also emphasis on how to prepare bread properly, for example. You know, there's a problem with high gluten in bread, and a lot of the old original grains, what are they called? There's a greenish grain here, rye, that's the word I was looking for, rye bread. You know, it was and some of the old varieties of wheat as well, but they used to cook with much lower gluten. But of course, you can't cook such fancy, smooth kind of pastries which are more sort of sticky and sort of finer if you use rye, because it's basically the gluten which holds it all together, I believe. Anyway, it's also in modern times, you know, we're told that you need to have whole wheat bread. Well, if you've eaten any commercial whole wheat bread, it can be quite difficult to digest, and it needs to be processed properly. And steps in, you know, very simple, old-fashioned technology, and it's called sourdough. And, you know, if you enjoy bread and you're prepared to kind of accept a different idea of what it can taste like, some older-fashioned taste, look up sourdough. It's amazingly simple to make. All you need is best freshly ground low-gluten grains. Make your own flour, of course. Make it whole wheat. Leave every bit in it. And you just add water, you know. Wait a few days. Let those natural bacteria come in. And it's really not much more to making bread than just allowing the natural bacteria to come in, mixing the flour, getting, you know, a bit thicker, letting it rise, bunging it in the oven. You know, before my wife took over the bread making about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I was making the family bread for a good few years before she really took hold of this whole food, as I'm describing now. And now she does a wonderful bread, a job of making bread for us. Also, vegetables. You know, vegetables are healthy, but we do need to understand they aren't nutrient dense. There might be some elements in them if they are grown in really high quality, ground. And they can be quite difficult to digest. And Weston A. Price, he found that they were vegetables and a lot of grains. It's probably too much, not enough time now and too many details to go into, but they would be fermented. They would be sort of dry, that there were different ways of processing them in order to remove either like difficult to digest elements. You know, for example, beans, they need to be soaked in a certain way to remove indigestible elements, which also make them not taste very nice, you know. And vegetables, it's beneficial for many of them to actually be fermented, and it actually makes them taste much better. Additionally, a lot of this processing, even my wife has been discovering recently, the processing of meats, not only did it allow those vegetables to be stored very easily for longer periods of time, but it meant that they were partially digested and more available and easier to digest, less of a burden on our digestive systems and our bodies, and all the goodness more available if they were processed in this way. And there was less need for fridges and refrigeration, so there really is a lot more to, for example, smoking and curing meat than just for its taste benefits, you know. My wife has recently, the last pig we killed, she has been curing in vinegar for a few days and different mixtures, the meat. And when she cooks it, it's just so quick to cook, and it's so soft and tasty and juicy. It's amazing. I can't believe all these years we've been having just, unsoaked, unprocessed in vinegar meat from any animals. You know, it was so much nicer. So hopefully I've mentioned just some of the foods which are mentioned in this book that the peoples ate. But, and of course, the things that they didn't eat were the highly processed foods, mostly containing sodium, which isn't really the salt that people were eating in the days. You know, sodium is just the salt element. I'm not a chemist or anything, but I understand it's devoid of the minerals, you know, and salt is actually, just like I said earlier, there is a half-truth that nowadays a high salt in our diet is bad for us. It is actually true. High sodium, which is the modernized, highly processed salt, just like processed sugar, is bad for us. What we really need is salt in our diet. It's very important, but we need high mineral salt and unprocessed in a much more natural, soft way. So those minerals and elements, which are very important for us, aren't destroyed. Salt is good, you know, and but we don't want the bad, highly processed salt with no minerals. Of course, sugar, white sugar. Have a look up sugar blues and what sugar does to our bodies. You know, the strain it creates on the adrenal gland. I believe that's the gland, and the sort of the escalating, the ups and the downs. Have a search for sugar blues and the effects on the cravings and the desires for foods which contain sugar and salt. You know, we don't have to think too much to try and understand why is sugar and salt being put to such large quantities in the highly processed foods, because it is very addictive. It creates this sort of rush of energy when we have it. And then, you know, fairly shortly afterwards of consuming any of those foods, we sort of plummet down. And this continual for a few years, 20 years, 10 years, however long, of upwards and downwards, you know, it creates a terrible strain on our bodies and our adrenal glands. You know, if we let it go on unchecked, it can create more complicated problems. But it creates an addiction, you know, because we're always craving. It never satisfies us, you know. So, and of course, high gluten, processed and low quality bread. That's another. It's an anti-nutrient and not conclusive, not conducive to healthy people, you know. But now maybe you're asking, well, I'm making all these statements. How do I know, and how can you tell what is it doing to people? You know, what do people look like who have grown up on healthy food, and what are the characteristics, the body shapes, the tendencies in people who have had bad food? Well, Weston A. Price, he discovered this. As well as having very, very straight and strong and well-spaced teeth, you know, the people he found had no need for dental correction. They had no need for braces and or removing teeth and straightening them. Like, even in his day in the US in the 20s and 30s, they were using braces, I understand, and the many people had crowded teeth. And to be honest, you know, it's very difficult nowadays. Even, you know, if I ask somebody, you know, why do people, young children, why aren't the teeth straight in our mouths? Why do we need at a certain age to remove a few teeth either side and then to put these metal constructions on and straighten them? You know, didn't God, didn't nature, whoever it is, you know, design human body just perfectly? You know, well, why doesn't it grow straight? Well, Weston A. Price discovered and proved, and recent people who have been practicing what he suggests have discovered in their own children that there have been no need for braces. So a few of the practices, well, maybe I should carry on describing the shapes of people. So as well as having teeth which actually fitted in the mouths of these people in good condition, so they didn't need braces to straighten them or anything like that, low amounts of cavities, he also found that people were generally shorter and broader, were very fine figures. You know, the men were short and stocky and stout, and they looked really capable, and not necessarily because they were working terribly hard, but they had that sort of ruggedness and strength and durability about them, which you don't often see in modernized peoples. I know it's possible to go to the gym and to bulk ourselves up to look tough, but that's not the kind of toughness I'm talking about. It's interesting. You know, even here in the Czech Republic, all the old people are extremely short, you know. Because of socialism here, they had, up to about 20 years ago, before the capitalism was introduced in a rush, there was a lot, the foodstuffs were much higher quality. You know, the modern ideas of what is healthy and what isn't healthy hadn't been introduced into the Czech Republic. So they were eating lots of cream and fat and butter, and they were eating a lot of those foods. Of course, along with sugars and processed foods, but, you know, in the countrysides where those people had access, they looked different to the people in the cities. So they were shorter, broader. And the reason I mention this is because my Czech wife's grandparents, you know, she remembers how her grandfather was so short and so broad, you know, and he was sort of almost as broad as he was short, but he wasn't necessarily strong or anything, you know, but he was just short and broad. And you can still see that as you walk around and see the old people, especially in away from the big cities and in the countrysides. So Weston A. Price, he discovered that the people in these primitive groups, isolated, societies and communities. They were shorter, broader. So, we don't have to think too far, but answer me this. When I was growing up, everybody else seemed to be taller than me. You know, my parents and everybody seemed to think, well, why aren't I as tall as everybody else? You know, everyone else is shooting up, but I'm not growing as quick as they are, you know. But it's actually a good thing. You know, it's actually good not to shoot up and be massively tall, because it's actually a degenerative disease or a degenerative problem connected with malnutrition. And, you know, maybe your eyes are going round in your head and you're thinking, dude, man, what are you talking about? This is absolute nonsense. Well, I ask you just to study a little bit of this little book and the website, westernaprice.org, and see for yourself if you have any interest, or if you're at all intrigued by these things I'm mentioning, you know. So, there is a phenomenon now with young people seemingly getting taller and taller as generation goes on. And Weston A. Price discovered this and noticed it himself, and noticed it in these same groups once they started eating different foods, and made the connection. There's a phenomenon now that often the youngest child in the family is the tallest, and the eldest, the first child, is the shortest. And this is, if you consider the nutrition, that the eldest son might have had slightly better nutrition from his mother being the first child, and progressively as the mother has a few more children, and often she would have the children too close to each other. This is another idea I should quickly mention, that before children were conceived in these societies, you know, they would be a little bit strict. There was nice examples in the Austrian Alp villages, that they would, marriages, weddings would occur in the late summer. And, you know, they knew why they had marriages in the late summers, because the young children, the young people who were getting married, they would have all season to have, you know, the best milk and butter and cheese from the fast growing grass from their cows. You know, they'd have all the energy and the life from that spring and summer, you know, to nourish their bodies, so that once they got married, of course, the first thing they're going to do, or one of the first things, is to go and start practicing creating children. And when you conceive children, they wanted to make sure that the young people's bodies and sort of health had been pumped up by good food. There were other societies who would deliberately, when two people were going to conceive, before they would try and conceive, maybe 6 months beforehand, they would elect somebody in the tribe, maybe two people, to travel off every day and to get the right kind of food for both the man and the woman, so that the eggs and the sperm and everything would be at its fullest potential, so they would be able to conceive easily, and so all of the DNA and everything which is transferred during that phase is maintained and is in the highest quality, so that the child would have the best start, and grow well, and it's very beautiful, and these things are ignored, but nowadays, in the main. So they would also practice larger intervals between each child, 3 or 4 years before, in between conceiving each child. And in some societies, it was really frowned upon, you know, that you're doing a disservice to the next child if you conceive him too early, you know, because there isn't enough time for the mother to really recover all of her strength. And, you know, it's really underestimated the amount it takes from a mother, be it a human mother or a bovine cow mother, how much it takes to give birth. Maybe in animal husbandry, or any kind of animal breeding for pets or dogs, maybe you keep dogs, that it is really important what you feed your dogs or your cows or your sheep. And, of course, the same applies to your children, you know, but often in our stressful lives, we don't have time to even consider this, and we are actually told by the mainstream and our doctors that these things aren't important, and we are led to believe that they will fix it all, you know, but unfortunately, just like in hacking and Linux and computers, often it's better to rely upon yourself more and do everything you can and not rely that someone else will do it for you, you know. So they would practice larger intervals between conceiving children, and so some of these practices to maximize the health of the next generation, because it's very important, especially if you don't have all the, you know, the industrial machines and everything to make life easy. You need to make sure that everybody in the community, in the society, is happy and healthy and vibrant. You know, it's like the weakest link in the chain is the one, you know, that the whole chain will break for any weakest link. So it's in all of our best interest to make sure that everybody has the best potential, you know. And and of course, if you're isolated and you all depend upon each other for survival through the long hard winters, and you've got to harvest, you know, all your food and make and do everything yourselves, then you need to make sure you're strong and capable. Everybody is, you know. There's no dead wood. So, what other characteristics did these people have? So, they were shorter, broader, they easily conceived, they had good teeth. They didn't need prisons. They didn't have crime or societal problems, and that's probably a lot connected with everybody being very happy and satisfied, because you know, it does make a difference what you eat. If your body is full, you know the feeling. If you're hungry, you tend to be a bit irritable. Well, if you just extrapolate that a little bit more and say, well, if my body is hungry for the nutrients that I ate just now, my belly's full, so I don't feel irritated like I would be if I wasn't hungry. But my body is sort of crying out for the good food, so maybe my body's not able to have patience in that situation or have perseverance, you know. So it really is a prerequisite to make sure that every function of our body is, you know, given what it really needs to function, you know. Just like if there's any part of our body which is missing what it needs, then that's a weak link in the chain, and it's going to cause problems. Another thing I should quickly mention is, it was a little shocking after I finished reading this book, and I think it's something that opened up my eyes very much, is what does the face of a healthy person look like? And, you know, you can't change, you know, if you've, you know, and all of these discussions, when I'm talking about, you know, the shape of somebody, or whether they're tall or short, and that's a sign of degeneration, or that's not good, it's a sensitive thing, and I really am not judging the sort of spirit or the good or badness of that person. It's like the first thing a husbandman looks in when he's buying a horse should be, you know, the way he walks, the shape of his legs, the horse's legs, and have a look inside and have a look at his teeth. Well, I'm just trying to apply the same logic, so at least we know what's going on. I'm really, you know, don't want to cause any offence to this. I'm not in perfect condition myself. I grew up in a town, had bad food all my life, except the last 10 years, where I've changed that myself after I'd known about these things. And I can definitely see the difference in my own children, even compared to the shapes and the disposition of the friends and family with similarly aged children, or even my brother's families and other situations. And even when I make these comparisons, I don't mean to be cruel or pointing, but just if you're interested at all, it's just as an example, you know. So please don't be offended or upset if I say these things. But So the shape of people's faces, you know, as well as being shorter and broader, the shape of degeneration is shown in the shape of our face. Maybe we're aware of the phenomenon of nose breathers. This is a class of people, a category, and maybe the doctors seem to think it's genetic, or it's something inherited, because, you know, your father or your mother was also a nose breather, and nose breathing just means that the nasal passages aren't broad enough, really. And it's very difficult to breathe through the nose, so people tend to have their mouths open and breathe through the mouth. And this doesn't make a person bad, but it's definitely inconvenient, because we were designed to breathe through our nose, and it's a very important function. But it has a very simple basis, and if you're about to conceive children, or if you have young children which are growing rapidly, you can have a big impact upon how they're going to grow by changing what they eat. So that's one aspect. Another aspect is the shape of the jaw. There's something called overbite or underbite, and it's basically the lower jaw kind of sticking out, and the teeth not meshing together properly, and it can be, you know, over or under, one way or the other, and it creates, if you look at the side profile of a person, it either gives the idea that a person has a chin which is inward slightly, or a chin which is sticking out. And this is another aspect connected with the development of the jaw, which is affected by the nutrition. You know, bones need calcium, you know, and I think the best source of calcium is in milk, even though that's much maligned nowadays, for good reason, because it's industrialized and homogenized and pasteurized. But, you know, raw milk, but there needs to be the fat in the milk, you know, so we need high-fat raw milk, and even better if there's plenty of high-quality butter. You know, you wouldn't believe the quantity of butter we eat. And if you were to look at me, I hope I'm a kind of picture of a helper. I don't have any kind of obesity problem, even though I'm licking and eating as much cream and butter as I can, and plenty of fried foods and lard and meat and some vegetables fermented, and some grains, but mostly those nutrient-dense foods, which I really enjoy. But back to the shape of people's faces. You know, there is this perception that, you know, models, female models, and what beauty looks like, and the image which is sold to young people of tall and skinny. And to be honest, after I read this book and I informed myself a little bit, my perception of a beautiful girl, a beautiful woman has completely changed, or a beautiful boy for that matter, a beautiful looking man has completely transformed. And I have a terrible time finding somebody that I find is beautiful, you know, because we all like to look at beautiful objects or beautiful people, you know, it's... I'm going to sound very strange here, but it's definitely true. But my perception now of beauty is broad faces, you know, eyes which are wide apart, big fat noses, you know, and a child or an adult with their mouths closed, you know, because the noses work properly. And the beautiful thing is all of this is obtainable, even if the parents or young adolescents haven't had the benefit of the best food. Once this knowledge is understood and executed with some conscientiousness, and it takes some effort to source these foods and to learn how to cook them, you know, and to change our taste buds, but the impact on the next generation and the transformation from having the tendency towards our children being taller than us towards the tendency of our children being shorter, you know, which and broader, is it can happen over one generation, you know, and you can see it in your young children, and it can really demonstrate for you the truth in this kind of nutritional wisdom which I'm trying to share here with you. I think that I'm going to try and make this a multi-part. I was speaking to somebody just before I started recording this over on the Oddcast IRC, And he was interested very much in permaculture and mentioned a few other things which I've been educating myself about for the last 10 years since I've been interested in all of this. And I would like very much to talk about all of this a bit more and to start discussing some of these things, because it really is in the line of hacking and programming, and it's so interesting and intriguing, you know. So I look forward to that as well. So I think there will be some future episodes and follow-ups to this episode, I hope. There was one interesting chapter at the end of the book, and perhaps a little controversial, but it was just a simple study of the shapes of the faces of convicts in the US in those 1920s and 30s. I'm not sure how serious or how far it was done, but it was quite easy to observe when you start to get an idea of these facial characteristics which lead to, which are signs of degeneration. And basically, you know, if you have a body which hasn't grown to its full potential, maybe you're sort of stooped over a little bit, your head is down, you're sort of taller and thinner than you should be, maybe your nose is more narrow and you have problems breathing, maybe your eyes are closer together because your face, your whole skeletal structure hasn't grown to the breadth it should grow, your eyes don't work so well, all of these kind of physical characteristics or attributes of your body which have been formed throughout your life and have been built from what you eat, you know, as well as of course the lifestyle of that person. Maybe he was kind of in a poorer neighborhood, maybe, you know, some inner city district and had some unfortunate background, you know, but all of those things, you can see them more prevalent in the disadvantage in the criminal, you know, and it's not to poke fingers or anything, but, you know, whereas at least in those days, the middle class would have access to better foods and wouldn't have those kind of degenerative attributes in their facial structures and their skeletal which would affect them, you know. So I hear sometimes these kind of charitable organizations talking about, you know, bringing nutritional food out to people, you know, to help these underprivileged people. And then I hear mention of what food they bring out and I think, oh my God, you know, if you want to help the poor people or even the middle class people, you know, avoid all of the dependencies on the modern, you know, interfering healthcare system, then we need as a foundation nutritionally dense food, you know. And I've got over my frustration and anger at it all over the last few years, but it makes me cringe a little bit, you know. So I'm hoping I've given a kind of summary to some of Weston A. Price's discoveries, kind of describing as best as I can a little sneak peek into what it might mean. What does a healthy person look like? What are the physical attributes, the body characteristics that might be able to distinguish and give you an indication for the kind of food you've had? And you know, even if you have a bad body shape, it's still beneficial to start eating nutritionally dense, nutrient dense foods, because you know, not only during those, you know, I think it's said every 7 years our body, all the cells in our body are completely replaced, so it's not like our bodies are grown during childhood and adolescence and early youth, and then, you know, we stop needing any nutritional food to keep us strong and healthy. Those requirements continue, you know, and even in old age, maybe they're actually higher, or through perhaps menstruation, and if you want to avoid osteoporosis, the weakening of the bones, especially in females, in women, then we need to eat the correct foods, you know. And perhaps if you I know it's more complicated in the US because of the private health system, and the cost of some of these procedures or helps that they give to you. And maybe especially for you people, it is actually more cost effective to reconsider what you're eating now, as to, instead of, you know, saving up to pay for some medical health system and scheme for your later years, you know. I personally don't subscribe to any kind of health system. I had to go to the doctors a few years ago because I broke an arm. I got kicked by a horse very hard. But until that point, I hadn't been to a doctor's or anything, and I had trouble even believing that I broke my arm, to be honest, but maybe that's a separate story. And all of these things, I'm not saying that I'm the most healthy. I have other problems connected with stress, you know, tension and what have you, because it can be stressful trying to manage all of these things and raising young children and what have you, you know. It's a challenge. But I hope this has been interesting, and I would very much like to do a follow-up episode, and it would help me a great deal if you've got any comments or if you'd like me to try and clarify anything. But once again, the book is called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, A Comparison of Primitive and Modern Diets and Their Effects. And of course, you can find that at Amazon. Or maybe it might be mentioned on my podcast blog, which is dudmanovi.cz. And another great book, which I should just mention as well, is Sally Fallon's book, Nourishing Traditions. And the subtitle is The Cookbook That Challenges Politically Correct Nutrition and the Diet Dictocrats. And my wife is actually in the middle. She's almost halfway through of translating this book. It's over 700 pages. It has fascinating kind of sidebars at the edges of each page during the end of the book. And the middle parts are lots and lots of traditional healthy recipes. And so it's an amazing cookbook with sort of related historical anecdotes supporting the recipes and sort of little tidbits that you would never imagine were possible. And the first quarter of the book describes all of the function of this nutrition. It sort of justifies and explains all of these food types and why we should eat them. It's a fascinating book, and I would highly recommend getting it. And if you speak the Czech language, just wait until the spring and my wife will have it all read it, and we're going to try and self-publish that. So I'm sure nobody here is Czech, so that has no effect at all. Anyway, I would like to thank you for listening. It's been almost an hour now, and I really should finish. So once again, thank you very much for listening. Have a great week, and this has been Dudman from dudmanovi.cz for Hacker Public Radio, which I really enjoy.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.